Still in chapter 18, and we had a couple more of the verses spoken by the new Devi to Varaha, whose appearance day is tomorrow, by the way. In Kuru Varsha. So here's text 38, you just start to get into that. Now this is kind of interesting because it says here, well, Prabhupada translates it, O Lord, you do not desire the creation, maintenance, or annihilation of the material world, but you perform these activities for the conditioned souls by your creative energy. So you do this, the karoti, performing vishwa, stiti, and samyama, and uddayam, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe, of whom, meaning the Lord, ipsitam na ipsitam, desired and not desired. on the part of the one who's glancing over, desired and not desired. In other words, not desired by you, but desired by the conditioned souls. Or you don't want it, but you do it anyway. So he's saying, you do not desire. So always remember that this material world is actually not really what Krishna wants. exactly as a piece of iron moves under the influence of a lodestone, meaning magnet, inert matter moves when you glance over the total material energy. But he's called here Guna Karma Shakshina, witness. He's like just like a magnet works at a distance, so the Lord is not, he's working at a distance. So Prabhupada says this, sometimes the question arises why the Supreme Lord created this material world which is so full of suffering for the living entities entrapped in it. The answer given herein is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not wish to create the material world just to inflict suffering on the living entities. The Supreme Lord creates this world only because the conditioned souls want to enjoy it. So here he says how he's working under the supervision of the glance of the Lord. We discover when we are preaching, especially in the West, the amount of anger people have toward God. That's something that Prabhupada never kind of deals with. Of course, the Bhagavad Gita mentions attachment, fear, and anger. Prabhupada says one thing, frustration. But really, people are just angry at God. The interesting thing to discover is people tell you they don't believe in God. And then when they start describing the God they don't believe in, there's real anger. Now, how can you be angry at something that does, someone that doesn't exist? Well, it's almost a tribute. At least acknowledgement that he's there, but they're just angry because all the suffering, the things that happen to people, they don't know the cause and the reason from. They think being administered by God to them. Yeah.
You just mentioned it's good that they acknowledge, but is it good that they're at least angry on the Lord?
Yeah.
Or they get some benefit by it.
Prabhupada said once in one place, if you have to hate Krishna. Because then, if you become a big enough hater, Krishna will come and kill you and you'll be liberated. So anything in relationship to Krishna is ultimately good. Of course, they don't really know, so we have to tell them who it is they hate. But people have to know that actually he gives the material world to enjoy, but at the same time, it's not what they really want. They want Krishna's position. People want to be God, but the position is taken. And we can only give them the illusion of being God. Krishna never satisfies them completely. And they're constitutionally subordinate, so they always remain under God's control, but it happens to be through the agency of material nature. And if the difficulty arises. Well, anyway, Prabhupada makes the case of how matter doesn't work without anything. You see, it's always the Lord's glance in the second canto. The elements evolve one after another. Each time they're glanced at by the energy of the Lord, and things move and things happen. So that's what's required. He's also the material cause. Everything that comes evolves out of him, out of his material energy. And then the final prayer here, Bhudevi remembers, my Lord, as the original boar within this universe, you fought and killed the great demon Hiranyaksha. The original form of the boar, you can see there in the word for Adi Sukara. You're the first, the first Sukara. Then you lifted me from the Garbhodak ocean at the end of your tusk, exactly as a sporting elephant plucks a lotus flower from the water. I bow down before you. So the last one here is like this. So she remembers this pastime. And she was rescued in this way. Yeah, well, still, the example is a very large animal. And notice the you know, Bhumandala is compared here to a lotus flower.
How do the mundane scholars view Prabhupada's translations, where like you're putting like a phrase like that, and that the elephant and the lotus?
Yeah, and it's not there in the, you know, there the elephant is there. Yeah, playing like an elephant, so he adds a little bit. Because probably where it comes from is a commentator who just mentions like the way an elephant means, it means the elephant's picking a lot. Prabhupada just puts it in the text.
Yeah.
I think it's fair that sometimes, you know, this is not a literal translation, but look what Prabhupada does. I mean, first of all, you can check it. There it is. There's the verse. There's the word for word. There's a translation. So it's pretty transparent what he's done. So in many cases, his translations, for the sake of exactly like a sporting elephant. Now, those of us who aren't around elephants that much may not know what is all is going on. You're playing like an elephant. So here, this is, he just clarifies it. So he always, many of his translations are like purports. But you can see there are works like this all the time. For example, I have a work by Ramanujacharya, Ramanuja on the Bhagavad Gita. And basically, he's not a translation because he's also writing in Sanskrit. But he just kind of rewrites the verse to kind of give the import of the thing. And it's just a way of doing things. And many times in the commentaries in the Acharya, they just rewrite the verse. Vishnu Chakravarti kind of likes to do this thing where, like, there's a kind of implicit dialogue going on inside the verse, and he gives the implicit dialogue. You know, why Krishna says this? Because, well, someone may ask this, so Krishna says this, but then so then Krishna adds this, you know. And so this is, because Prabhupada's point is to convey the meaning of the thing. I mean, I guess everything has its downside. So that downside is that sometimes you don't know everything that's going on, or you can't. You know, we looked at a verse a little earlier up here that was pretty far out. Where is it? Is it in this one or the previous one? I think it's the previous. And these are mostly... Yeah, here it is. This is to Kurma. So Prabhupada gives this translation. My dear Lord, you manifest your different energies in countless forms, as living entities born from wombs, from eggs, from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as living entities, both moving and standing, including the demigods, the learned sages, and the pitas, as outer space, as the higher planetary system containing the heavenly planets, and the planet Earth with its hills, rivers, seas, oceans, and islands. This is an inventory verse, right? Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies, but originally you are one without a second. Therefore, there is nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation is therefore not false, but is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. Now, what the Sanskrit says, first is the list. You can see here. Jarayuja, born from a womb. Swetaja, born from perspiration. Andaja, born from an egg. You see, it goes through here. Born from earth. Characharam, moving and non-moving. Devas, rishis, pitris, bhutas, here meaning, bhuta meaning of earth, air, fire, ether. Indriyam, the senses. Dyao, the higher planetary system, Kam, the sky, Shiti, the earth, Shaila, the hills and mountains, Sarit, the rivers, Samudra, the oceans, Deepa, the islands, Graha Riksha, the stars and the planets, Iti. There's a list, right? Abhideya. Abhideya means that which is to be known as something. Huh? All these, he says, to be various named, Ekaha. What? It's like really stark. The one thing has all these various names, is to be named in these various ways, but it's one. So then you see what Prabhupada's purport. He they're your energies. He uses the word they're your energies. You are one without a second. And therefore, there's nothing beyond you. That's a deduction. There's nothing but Krishna. And then this anti-Mayavadi conclusion, which is deduced from all this, therefore they're not false. But real, yeah. So I think when we intelligently read these verses, we have to look at all that. Prabhupada put in those word meanings for a reason. So you can see. And then there's also the purport, which also sometimes goes through all these things in more detail.
Well, in one sense, it's a challenge to an ordinary scholar to go deeper into the meaning of the text.
Yeah,
right. It's just pulling more out of it and being more explicit.
And also, these texts have multiple meanings. That's the other thing. And sometimes you know, like there's what Mahaprabhu gave, how many readings of the Atma Rama verse? 64 or something like that. Yeah. You know, so we have this word polysemous, meaning having multiple meanings. Yeah. So they're like that. And so even a single translation can't do justice, you know, to what's going on. And all those multiple meanings, they're all valid. So let's go down. So we finish this chapter, and we move on to chapter 19, which is a description of the island of Jambudvip. But actually there's two more prayers, two more varshas, the southern ones. Aside, we've already done Hari Varsha on the way around. So now we're coming back down to King Pollution Varsha. You know, some people use Kim Purusha and Kinaras as simultaneously, but there are verses in the Bhagavatam that list them differently. It means the same thing, Kinara and Kim Purusha. But I was checking it out actually. I see some people call it Kinara Varsha. Not in Bhagavatam, but some other texts. But there's a list in various, one of these big lists of living entities. It lists both Kim Purushas and Kinaras.
Do you know what is the difference?
No, I have no idea.
Do you know that Kim Purushas are half human, half something else?
Yaksha. Yeah. Yeah, supposedly the wives, the women, the mothers are Yakshas and the fathers are humans or something like that. Here we will see in this where they. Where they offer prayers, they refer to themselves as residents of the wilderness, vana. The Sanskrit word vana, which is usually translated forest, really strictly means uncultivated land. So it's not necessarily, in the strict sense of the word, a forest. Uncultivated land can even be a desert. I think probably the closest English word that's equivalent to vana is wilderness. And wilderness sometimes can be mountains, and some can be swamps, marshes, all kinds of things. Wilderness, uncultivated land. So now we go down to Kim Purusha Varsha, the southern Varshas, is, and then of course we come to Bard Varsha, where we pretty much end up with a little kind of a footnote about some offshore islands of Jambudvip. And that concludes this chapter. But there's some the Bard Varsha, there's a bunch of prayers of the devatas, chanting the praise of Bard Varsha. One of those verses is one that's quoted quite often by Srila Prabhupada, as we see. So now in Kim Purusha Varsha, the Kim Purushas, up there and just north of the Himalayas. I always wonder if they have something to do with the abominable snowmen. Yetis. In Kim Purusha Varsha, the great devotee Hanuman is always engaged with the inhabitants of that land in devotional service to Lord Ramchandra, the elder brother of Lakshman and the dear husband of Sita Devi. Several places in this he's called Lakshman Agraja. Agraja means born before. Krishna Agraja is also a name of Balaram.
maybe other than
first, you know, yeah. Yeah, Agra. Like, it's also like the tip of the tusk is Agra. Is there a word was there from the tip of the tusk? Agra, the end of point or something. So that city is the first or number one.
Yeah? Another etymological question, just on the topic. The beings born from egg are called in Sanskrit Andanja.
Yeah.
And then the universe is called Brahmanda.
Yes, yeah, it's the egg of
Brahma.
So yeah, Lakshmana Graja and Sita Abhiram, pleasing to Sita. The dear husband of Sita Devi. And then it says that there, somebody named Aristasena, but I could not find any more information about this personage. Aristasena, who is described as the chief personality of Kim Purusha Varsha, along with Gandharvas. So here's a little professional musical help here, because they're the musicians. It's actually the Gandharvas are the ones that are chanting, according to this. Aristasena. This described in the translation, it describes that the Gandharvas are chanting and that Hanuman and Aristasena are listening with complete attention. Parama Kalyani, most auspicious, Bhartri Bhagavat Kata, he was described, Bhartri is his master. Bhagavad Kata, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Kata of Bhagavan, who is his master. He hears with great attention. Swayamcha, and personally he chants. Okay, so that's where it comes from. Hanuman chants the following mantras. And then in the purport, Prabhupada clears up the two different conceptions of Ramchandra and the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, that he, Lakshman, Bharata, Shatrughna incarnations, Ramachandra, his brothers Vasudev, Shankar, Shanimprat, Prajumna, Aniruddha, that is Ramachandra's Vasudev, Lakshman's Shankar, Bharata's Prajumna, and Shatrughna's Aniruddha. However, in the Padma Purana, Ramachandra's the incarnation of Narayan, the other brothers are incarnations of Shesha, Chakra, and Shankar. So Baladev says they're not contradictory. In some kalpas, they're this, and some other kalpas, they're the other. So it's just always a kalpa means a day of Brahma. So he just clears that up, and now we come to this mantra that they chant here. Nice mantra. I'm going to put the namahas at the end. Try to do that as much as possible. So that means what you see here, like nama, because we're gonna have a break, we'll have to put the little hiccup at the end, the namaha, the visarga at the end, namaha, Because here, because of the, it comes into contact with the vowel, it's just an we're gonna break it up. So here the namaha is there because it's followed by a sibilant, and here an O because it's followed by a, anyway, this is the Sandhi rules. So just follow me on this one. Om Namo Bhagavate Uttama Shlokaya Namaha.
Om Namo Bhagavate Uttama Shlokaya Namaha.
Arya Lakshana Shila Vrtaya Namaha.
Arya Lakshana Shila Vrtaya Namaha.
Upashikshitatmana Upasita Lokaya Namaha.
Upashikshitatmana Upasita Lokaya Namaha.
Saduvada Nikashanaya Namaha.
Saduvada Nikashanaya Namaha.
Ramanya Devaya Mahapurushaya Mahararajaya Namaha.
Ramanya Devaya Mahapurushaya Mahararajaya Namaha.
That's pretty nice, huh? That's a good bunch of names here, huh? So I worship, offer my obeisances to the Lord. Let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija Mantra Omkara. That's Om. It's a translation of Om. That's the feeling, you know, when you say it. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances to the Personality of Godhead. Who is the best among the most highly elevated personalities? Uttama Shloka. Who's always worshipped with select verses. There's another translation, the best among the Uttamas. So anyway. The reservoir of all the good qualities of the Aryans, Arya Lakshana Shila Vratta. Their character and behavior are always consistent. And you always control your senses and your minds. Upashikshita Atmana. Here your senses are under control. Upasita Loka. Here Upasita Loka is always remembered and worshipped by the different classes of living entities. You exhibit exemplary character to teach others how to behave, as another translation. Saduvada Nikashana, a stone for examining the good qualities of sadhus, touchstone that can verify all good qualities. You are worshipped by brahmanas, Brahmanya Devaya, we know that one, Manya Deva, Mahapurusha. So Mahapurusha, interesting, he says, in a word for word, the Supreme Lord who was worshipped by the Purusha Sukta because of being the cause of the material creation. So that's Mahapurusha. Maharaja, the King of Kings, Mahapurusha. So this is the Supreme Person, Mahapurusha, but here he has his little gloss on it there, worshipped by the Purusha Sukta. So that's the Upanishadic prayer. There's no commentary on that one, no purport. And now some verses, all being sung by the Gandharvas. Can't get them both on here at the same time. The Lord, whose pure form is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. It's interesting here. It Vishuddha Anubhava Matram Ekam. Okay. Matram is his transcendental body. He's untouched by the contamination of material nature, and because he's not subjected to material vision, that's not to be seen by with material eyes, it says in the word for word. He's known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has he a material name or form. Here again you have these things in Sanskrit that are a little more direct. Anama Rupa, without name and form. Prabhupada wants to head off a Mayavadi. Because you hear me, here you're offering to the Lord, you're describing him as a transcendental body, and then you said he's Anama Rupa. And Niraham, without aham, without a material ego, Prabhupada says, right? Because he has no material activities, no material name, no material form, we could say no material identity. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. That word is there, sudhiya, by sudhi, I would perceive by a pure consciousness. Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramchandra, and let us offer our respectful obeisances under the transcendental lotus feet. So again, you know, from a material point of view, the personal form of the Lord is contradictory. It is the form of one who has no form. The qualities of one who has no qualities. To the Mayavadis, you see, they start out with a premise that they don't examine. That form means material form, that name means material name, and so on. So if you say to them, as I have done, something like spiritual form, it's self-contradictory. It's very hard to somebody who is self-contradictory, it's very hard to reason with them. That's why Prabhupada many times he refers to Mayavadis or impersonalists as empiricist. You see, because they really are based on their sense perception, that what form means is what I have seen, material form. Name means material name, qualities mean material qualities. And if those things are absent, then no name, nor form, no qualities. What is a spiritual quality? Can anyone say? They can't see it. When they try to see it, there's nothing there. But we're saying, yeah, if you have transcendental spiritual vision, you can see these things. But to those who can't see it, it cannot be explained any more than you can explain the difference between blue and green to a blind person, or even a colorblind person. You have to see it to know what they're talking about. So Prabhupada wants to clear all that up in the purport. So this verse wants to first of all claim that he is the personality of God, and because he doesn't show up with four hands and the symbols. You know, he really is very much the Lord as a human being, a king, but a human. He acts in human society. He's not separated off in any way. Prashanta, never disturbed by those modes.
She's here.
Yeah, I noticed. Hare Krishna. You know, your name came up. This is you walked in. Look at that. How about that? Yeah. So Prabhupada has this nice paragraph, unless one is saturated with love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot appreciate the transcendental value of Lord Ramachandra, one cannot see him with material eyes. So therefore Ravana, you know, made this mistake, he underestimated Ramachandra to be a material person. And then we talked about this already, when he tried to carry off Sita, he got a material form. As soon as the materialist tries to lay their hands on Krishna's energy, turns to matter in their hands. As soon as a materialist, Krishna's energy is all Krishna's energy, therefore everything is spiritual. But as soon as you grab it to enjoy it, it turns to matter in your hands. You don't get spirit, you get matter. By definition. And then, of course, Prabhupada quotes many times in this, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilok. You can be seen if you have this treatment of Premanjana. Anjana is ointment for the eyes, and if it's that Premanjana. We have another prayer about Gyananjana, spiritual master with a shalaka, a little medical instrument, puts this ointment of Gyananjana, and here's the Premanjana. You need some kind of treatment to our material vision in order to be able to perceive this reality. And then in some ways this is addressed to the Lord as Paramatma. So Prabhupada says, because the Paramatma has no material connection, he is described here as Anama Rupa Niraham. He has no material identity, whereas the Jivatma does. The Jivatma may introduce himself as an Indian, American, German, and so on, but the Paramatma has no such designations. Therefore, he has no material name. The Jivatma is different from his name, but Paramatma is not. His name and he himself are the one and the same thing. This is the meaning of Niraham, which means without material identity. This word cannot possibly be twisted to mean that the Paramatma has no ahankara, no I-ness or identity. Of course, that's exactly what happens. He has his transcendental identity of the Supreme. This is the explanation given by Srila Jiva Goswami. According to another interpretation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Niraham means Nirnischayena Aham. The Nir stands for Nirnischayena. Niraham does not mean the Supreme has no identity, rather the stress given by the word Aham proves strongly that he has his personal identity, because Nir not only means negative, but also means strong ascertainment. Near nischaya. Nischaya, you know, something is certain. Nischaya, being fixed. He uses this word all the time. Utsaha nischaya. So this is another way to read this. In the next text, he's called here Marcha Avatara. An avatar is a marcha, a mortal, we could say, a human being. Marcha Avatara to Iha here in this world as Marcha Shikshanam, to teach the marches. He appeared among the marches. To teach the marches, raksha udvahu vaya, to kill the raksha,
marcha is good, one, five.
No, yeah, we say Marchaloka.
Yeah.
Marchaloka is Bhumanda, or at least Bhardvarsha. Marchaloka, sometimes Prabhupada says the whole material world is Marchaloka, but mostly it appears in human beings, mortals. The demigods are called Amara, right? They don't die.
It refers to Bhardvarsha.
Huh?
It refers to Bhardvarsha.
Yeah, because the other Varshas are like some kind of heavenly planets. They're kind of low grade Amaras.
So Nidhu Loka is Bharata Varsha.
It's a valley. The valley of the shadow of death. So they're Marcha. So here Prabhupada, he says a human being is a Marcha, particularly. I said English commonly you say mortals. The mortals and the immortals. I'm a mere mortal. The expression goes. So Marcha Avatara, Marcha Shiksha. No, for teaching the marches.
What are the demons considered?
Huh? A lot of them are humans. I guess they also can be considered, you know, they actually come from Swarga, but the Bila Swarga. I mean, the word demon we use in different ways, right? Some refers to this particular class of Daityas and Danavas, whereas there's a certain lineage of people. And the other, because they descend from Diti or Danu. I don't know who Danu is, but anyway, the Danavas, offspring of the descendants of Danu. And so that's one group of people. But then Prabhupada commonly uses the word demon for various types of human beings, too.
So there's a difference between Rakshas, Daityas, and Danavas?
Yeah, there are different kinds of. There's a whole demonology, you know.
Is Maya Danava?
Yeah, he's a Danava, Maya Danava. That's right. He's one of the Danavas. I said I've never been able to find out, at least from because Prabhupada just sometimes he kind of lumps them together, but it's clear that Daitya means a descendant of Diti, and Danava means a descendant of Dhani. There's a Sanskrit, you know, standard process by which you say somebody is. You know, descended from or an offspring of Yadu Yadava. You know, it's the same. You take a word like Yadu and you want to say belonging to or descending from Yadu. First you take the first vowel and you strengthen it. So it becomes with a long A, Yadu. And then you change it to the up to clinch it. So it ends in a U, so you have to change that U to an A, V, and then add an A, A, and the Yadava. Yadava. Mm-hmm. We offer pranam mantras to Prabhupada, namaste. You'll notice it's not Saraswati, as people say. It's actually, in the locative case, it's Saraswata. The long A, and it says there's an A on the end because it's we're offering it to Saraswate with an E because it's the place you're, you know, but that the actual word is Saraswata, which means disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati.
Sometimes it's very Saraswati.
Prabhupada at one time Prabhupada, I think one version Prabhupada gave is it had Devam. Saraswate Devam. And then somebody asked him about it, one of the Sanskrit people, and he said, and they suggested it's Deve is better, and Prabhupada said, yeah, it was. So if you look in the books, it's always Deve, but the earlier usage is Devam, and some people, once they learn it, they never change. That's what I remember when that happened, when there was like this discussion about whether it should be Devam or Deve. So Prabhupada agreed it was more correct data. Yes, that's the way it is now. But it's Saraswati with an E, not an I. But it's actually the locker. Where do you offer obeisances? So sometimes it's at the feet, at the place. So the Sanskrit has this locative ending, meaning a place where something happens. And for the A declensions, the locative singular is a E.
So it's Saraswati when you pronounce, right?
Correct. Yeah, so Saraswati. But a lot of times you hear people Saraswati, but it's Saraswati.
And since we just
hear
Sanskrit, Saraswati
is
here
Paschatya. Paschatya, yeah. Another word that way is Vishnu Vaishnava. The I in Vishnu becomes strengthened, so it becomes AI. And then that U for Vishnu has to become an AV to add an A on the end. So Vishnu, Vaishnava. The same thing.
Vishnu written off in a tangent?
Yes. Yes, anyway. Well, how do we get there? We were talking something about Ramchandra.
Talking about Marta Loka. And then Amara.
Amara.
Dhanava.
Oh yeah, the Dhanavas and the Daichas, that's right. But people should know a few things like this anyway. You have to know too much Sanskrit to find your way. So then it says, so he's appeared among the marches to want to kill demon Rama, because Prabhupada says here in the translation, which is not in the text, it was ordained that Ravana, the chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Lord Ramachandra appeared in the form of a human being. So there was something ordained. It was the backstory, you know, how it happened. So he had to be that way. But then he taught to teach them too. And then Prabhupada like expands on that. And one of the common things that it said that Ramchandra teaches, don't get too attached to your wife because you suffer. So that's what but then it says also well at least but still he's the self-sufficient personality of Godhead and he enjoys in himself. Nothing is lamentable. So he did it to teach. But then he comes to teach us so many things. Lord Ramachandra taught the devotees it is better not to enter married life. This is a warning to devotees. But then the instruction from Sita is how to be a beloved and dutiful husband from Ramachandra, and one must protect his wife and the duty of a faithful husband. He illustrates that's to be. Lord Ramachandra could have produced hundreds and thousands of Sitas from his pleasure energy. But just to show the duty of a faithful husband, he also rescued Sita from the hands of Ravana and also killed Ravana and all the members of his family, pretty much. But then, even though it appears they suffer, they do not, because they are transcendental, not just the Lord, but also Vaishnavas. And so then, here we get another opinion. Although he may, a Vaishnava, may appear to suffer material pains, his position is called transcendental bliss in separation. Viraha. The emotions a lover and beloved feel when separated from one another are actually very blissful, although apparently painful. Therefore, the separation of Lord Ramchandra from Sita Devi, as well as the consequent tribulation they suffered, is but another display of transcendental bliss. That is the opinion of Srila Vishwanathacharya Thakur. So they have so many different layers of meaning about the suffering. On the one hand, to show you what not to do, but on the other hand, on the other internal meaning, it was viraha and separation. So then it says, since Lord Sri Ramchandra, notice how, by the way, all of these, this is the one series of prayers which almost all refer to the particular pastime of the Lord. The others, just something is mentioned at the end sometimes. Otherwise, they're very, very, just independently philosophical and don't mention the particular thing that they did. But here, except at the end, he gets quite into these the pastimes of Ramchandra. I don't know if that's just interesting. It's what happens here. Since Lord Sri Ramchandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudev, he is not attached to anything in this material world. He is the most beloved super soul and self of all self-realized souls. They're very intimate friend. He's full of all opulences. Therefore, he could not possibly have suffered separation from his wife, nor could he have given up his wife and Lakshman, his younger brother. To give up either would have been impossible.
Why was Lakshman so special when there was Bharat and Shatrughna also? Lakshman was.
Maybe all of them in a way. All of the separation. I mean, Bharata really suffered, you know, like crazy. Lakshman couldn't be away from him, he just couldn't stand it, so he stayed with him. But of course, in the end, he gave up all of them. Because Lord Ramchandra descended to teach human society how a dutiful a king should be, he apparently gave up the company of Mother Sita and Lakshman. Actually, however, he could not have given them up. So there's the internal story. Different from what's the appearance for the devotees. Again, he's in this verse, he's Lakshmana Graja. So here now the residents of Kimpurusha Varsha are saying this, Hanuman or Stasena, or both, they say, one cannot establish friendship with the Supreme Lord Ramchandra on the basis of material qualities, such as one's birth, an aristocratic family, janma, nor one's personal beauty. Where's beauty, huh? Sabhagam means good fortune, vak, elegant manner of speech, buddhi, sharpness of intelligence, akriti, the features of the body, or superior race or nation. None of these qualifications is actually a prerequisite for friendship with Lord Sri Ramchandra. Otherwise, how is it possible that although we uncivilized inhabitants of the forest, see here they are, vana, Okasha means inhabitant, Vana Okasha, inhabitants of the forest, or we could say the wilderness.
Inhabitants
whatever, have not taken noble births, although we have no physical beauty, and although we cannot speak like gentlemen. Ramchandra has nevertheless accepted us as friends. That's a nice, that's really sweet. In a prayer to Krishna expressing her feelings, Srimati Kunti Devi called him a Kinchana Gochara. The prefix a, not, and Kinchana means something from this material world. So Krishna becomes the possession of those who have no possessions. Rupa Goswami has said the price for achieving God's favor is simply one sincere eagerness to have it. Lodyam eka mulyam. And then he gives the example of Kolavecha, who was sold his banana skin pots and was poor but was a great devotee of the Lord. And yeah, he lost the shooting. That's the qualification of purity. And then finally we come to the last of these prayers, the iti, indicating the conclusion. And there's atta, therefore. Whether one is a sura or asura, or anara, not a human being. Prabhupada says bird, beast, animal, and so on, or anara, everyone should worship Lord Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, wholeheartedly. Whose Manuja Akritin appears as a human being on earth. There's no need of great austerities or penances to worship the Lord. It says me, it means he. He accepts even a small service offered by his devotee. Wow, they have a typo in here. You know, this is not up to the BBT standards, really. They wouldn't let that kind of stuff happen. For he accepts even a small service offered by his devotees. This is the translation of Sukrit Dajnam, easily made grateful. Thus he is satisfied. And as soon as he's satisfied, the devotee is successful. Indeed, Lord Ramchandra brought all the devotees of Ayodhya back home, back to Godhead. Then Prabhupada, this is the special advantage of worshipping Lord Ramchandra, and there's the same advantages in worshipping Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he also says how. And then he wants to point out that all the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of God, but especially Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, and later Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, delivered many of the living entities present before them, indeed almost all of them. So in this case, they're Mahavana Naya, you know, the Mahavana, the most magnificent. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is therefore represented in the six-armed forms of Shatbhuj Murti, which is a combination of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he recommends worshipping Shatbhuj Murti, and then you get all three in one. merciful Lord. So now, any question?
About Shadbhushamurti, and it has arms of both, all three of them, but the body,
Mahaprabhu. Yeah. Because that was, who did he show Sadbhuji? He showed it to someone. It's like an epiphany, you know, it's a to Sarvabhauma. Yeah.
You know, we generally say Sarvabhauma, but actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sarvabhauma is the forum for.
Well, who says it then? Who saw it? Sadbhuji. Somebody look it up? I don't remember. All of these things, the Panchatattva, you know, people saw the Panchatattva, there was a revelation at the house of Shivas.
Maybe another book like Chaitanya Bhagavata says he saw
what did Ramananda Roy see?
He
saw Radha and Krishna combined.
And Prakashananda said?
Maybe you have a research going on here, so we can find this out. No, he just says Ayodhya. He just the text says northern. it says Uttaran, he says, of northern India. Yeah, so this is tacking that Varsha. Ramchandra was actually in Bart Varsha. But when he went to get Hanuman and those people, he went north, did he not? And all the monkeys and Sugriva, where were they? Ayodhya is pretty far north anyway. It is. They went south. He went south to get them.
Yeah, that was Kiskindha.
Yeah. Yeah, this Kimpurusha Varsha is the next Varsha north of Bart Varsha, right?
Are
they what?
The south of Mother.
Yeah,
yes, Anoja is south. That's right. It's past the Himalayas. Yes. Because in Kimpurusha Varsha, Ramchandra is being worshipped as a deity. And each Varsha there's a deity. And the inhabitants worship that deity. So, for whatever reason, in Kimpurusha Varsha, they worship Lord Ramchandra. Maybe because, like them, he was very favorable to monkeys. The monkeys are actually a kind of human being. I understand that according in the 400,000 species of human life, monkeys and bears, rikshas are also included.
Bears.
Yeah. Yeah. Riksha Raj, right? Huh?
The first hit was just bears.
You have to look at Chaitanya Charitamrita.
His Vasudeva as a deity form.
As a deity form. That's here in this, in Bart Varsha, performing his Leela. That's right. But he's worshipped in a deity form in King Purusha.
Hanuman, he still lives in King Purusha.
That's what it says. I think some of these great devotees can be in several places. Well, it's clear Bhudevi can be in many places at once, but as mentions also, Vaivaswata Manu is in Ramanyaka Varsha. And so I assume, and what about Prahlad? He's in Hari Varsha, but he's also in other places too. Either they commute Or they can be located in several places at once. Yeah?
What is Nityananda?
Huh?
It was the Nityananda Prabhu there.
Nityananda Prabhu saw the Sadbhuj. That's our Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Nityananda Prabhu.
When we go to Puri, in Sarvabhauma's house, they have Sadbhuj.
Where?
In Puri, Jagannath Puri.
Uh-huh.
In Sarvabhauma's house.
Yeah, they have Sadbhuj. So it may be another tradition, or maybe Chaitanya Bhagavat that says that. But here in Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita it says Nityananda. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It does say instead of a water pot and Danda, it's there's the Vyasa Kanchadas Club was.
Oh, there's a different
Sadbhuja. That's a different Sadbhuja.
Yeah.
That's not the same one we're talking about. Then you, so there was one that was with the forehand form that Nityananda. You keep looking.
That was still six. I don't know.
The picture is in the CC. That's for sure. I remember it.
Where did he go when he
met Hanuman? He put Rudra's tail.
That is Hindu Russian.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the Ramayana.
That's Mahabharata.
The Mahabharata, yeah, that's even less. You know, where all the translations you get to read. I don't know. Yeah.
25 different they have in Oxford. Krishna Srila Prabhupada says.
Yeah. There's so many. Madhvacharya complained about the state of the text of the Mahabharata. There's so many different versions.
Mm.
Yeah, it did. There was textual problems even then.
Prabhupada sent a letter to Jadarani, and she asked if there was a version of the Mahabharata that he could refer to when he said, well, actually, I can. So there was a problem.
Yeah. You mean as far as translations go? Yeah, yeah, they're all. I mean, there's Ganguly. Anyway, I have this one by Van Boyden at the University of Chicago. He insists on translating Kshatriyas as barons, which is really irritating.
Is the
Ganguly one okay? Huh? You heard what Prabhupada said. He couldn't recommend any of them. That's why, actually, most Western devotees don't know it very well, and everybody from India has been hearing it. You know, there's this the Superman comics of India, kind of. Yes, what you hear all the time, watch on television. But I don't know how accurate all those ones are. And some of it's mundane. Bhaktisiddhanta, in fact, talking about a mundane rasa, he cites the story of Nalan Damayanti. It's just a material love story, you know? That's one I know because when I was taking a Sanskrit course, we translated that, you know? Typically, it's what they think.
I think Avanan was given a benediction on it as well. The glories of Lord Rama resounded on the earth. He will remain there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's go to a place called Bharata, with a long A. You notice Bharata because it's named after Bharata. Bharata Maharaj does not have a long A. But the place named after him does, Bharata, by the same. In that Varsha, the Supreme Lord is manifested as Naranarayan Akya, known as Akalpa Antam, to the end of the, well, the Kalpa, Prabhupada uses millennium, but a Kalpa, sometimes uses it for a Yuga. Prabhupada just takes millennium to mean a very long time. Strictly, in English, it means 1,000 years, a period of 1,000 years. But most people forget that. I don't know. I'm the kind of a guy who always remembers etymological meanings of things. So when I talk about a young man who hasn't had sex as a virgin, I think it. Virgin means a girl. An unmarried girl is a virgin. So most of these words take on meanings of their own. So millennium just means to most people a very long time. But here it's a kalpa. The end of the kalpa, which is the day of Brahma. He's there at Badarik Ashram. In Bhart, although it doesn't say that in the text, Prabhupada supplies it for us in the Sanskrit text. To favor his devotees by teaching them, what does he teach them? Dharma, Jnana, Vairagya, Aishwarya, Upashama, control of the senses, Uparama, freedom from false ego, Atma Upalambanam, self-realization, and so on. He is advanced in the opulences of spiritual assets and engages in executing austerity till the end of this millennium. This is the process of self-realization. He's described here as a vyaktigati, whose glories are inconceivable. People in India may visit the temple of Narayan at Badarik Ashram just to learn. Has anybody here been there? Yeah, what's there?
I was very young.
I don't know. Everybody remember? Yeah?
There's a big
temple
there.
Yeah, is there a deity in Narayana?
There is
a
deity in Narayana.
Uh-huh.
And there's two mountains.
Yeah.
This is the
So especially they're teaching austerities and then Prabhupada says, unfortunately, people of Kali Yuga do not even know the meaning of austerity, and therefore Mahaprabhu comes to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, teach the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So by doing this, we can then come to follow Narayan Rishi. Then it says about them that Narada, then it mentions Narada Muni. In his own book, notice the Narada Pancharatra, Prabhupada supplies all that information. Bhagavan Narada has very vividly described how to work to achieve the ultimate goal of life, devotion. Are we going to lose this?
Only if it goes continue.
Through knowledge and through execution of the mystic yoga system. He has also described the glories of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature to Saravani Manu in order to teach those inhabitants of Bhartvarsha to strictly follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma, how to achieve devotional service to the Lord. Thus Narada Muni, along with the other inhabitants of Bhartvarsha, always engage in the service of Narayan, and he chants as follows. So notice, by the way, Bharati, in the word for word, the land known as Bhartvarsha, India. And throughout this whole section, Prabhupada repeatedly talks about Varsha as India, even in relationship to the rest of the world. So here, at least, Bhartvarsha is India. Other places, Bhartvarsha is the whole world. Here it's India. Again, it seems to be a question of context, how you take it. and dealing with multiple contexts.
I have a quote from Prabhupada where in the same sentence he says Parabhasha means Indians, and actually it means the whole world.
Yeah, one place he says I have it in this section of the Bhagavatam. He says Bharatvarsha, India, formerly the world. Like somehow Bharatvarsha, in the course of time, has shrunk down. Some people in ISKCON have to explain this, have embraced the theory of continental drift. That's a scientific theory that originally there was one continent on Earth called, what they call Pangaea, which was surrounded by water, and then gradually over the close of millennia really, they drifted apart. Right? And that's become this tectonic drift. Tectonic plates are moving and the continents are drifting apart. And so people have embraced that one. I don't know, I think that's maybe, but it does, then you have one continent, that's one place, and it's a long, long time ago, but very long time ago. And according to the theory of tectonic drift, India was somewhere down around Australia, and the Indian subcontinent, and it's gradually colliding, has moved up against Asia, and the Himalayas result when the plates push up the other plates and the mountains come up. That's what they say. So if you buy part of it, maybe you have to buy the whole thing and it gets a little hairy. But anyway, there are people who believe like that.
Except this theory, so it means Lanka was more like Australia and not Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
There was in the fourth canto somewhere, I was saying that there were remnants of a city, I thought that they said was, let me find it, but it was nowhere near Lanka. It was,
oh, yeah. So,
yeah.
Brazil, yeah.
Brazil, yeah, that's right. That's right. Prabhupada did not accept that what we call, what's now called Sri Lanka, what we used to call Ceylon when I was a kid, was, that's not where Ravana was. It was
further away. 100
yojanas. Hanuman jumped. Yeah. We had an old discussion on the internet about Sri Lanka. Nobody could really come up with any conclusive idea about exactly where it is, because of the descriptions and the distances. It's very difficult to ascertain exactly where Sri Lanka might have been.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a statement, I still didn't find the reference, that as the yogas progress from Satya to Kali, then the earth shrinks and then expands. That's what I've heard from some devotees.
Well, because of King Mushikunda.
Yeah.
When he woke up, then he came out of his cave and everything was much smaller than
yeah,
he had.
That's true. Does that mean everything shrinks?
Well, the trees and all the geographical features were all very small.
So. That means a ruler would shrink too.
Maybe he just grew.
I mean, if I say this statement, I had a philosophy course and we contemplated this statement. Everything doubles in size overnight. Now, if it's everything, how could you tell the difference? Because to say double in size implies there's something that doesn't change and you can measure it, you know. Well, maybe within a frame of reference, things are shrinking and expanding. I also, you know, as you go up toward Brahmaloka, time slows down relative to us. It's as if, according to relativity theory, the further out you get, the more you're accelerating close to the speed of light. Because then, according to those relativity formulas, time slows down relative to us. But also, things get longer. So maybe there's a basis for a yojana that's still the yojana, but the yojana itself is longer relative to us. If you're there, then our yojana looks littler. some more speculation.
But if a lifetime of Brahma appears 100 years to him, and our life appears 100 years to us,
yeah.
But then from his perspective, our lifespan is like so short.
Yeah.
Well, if we would be able to perceive what Brahma is doing now, would it really appear as a slow motion?
That's right. If we had a, I put this in a BTG article once, but if we had a video camera in Brahma Loka and a thing here, you wouldn't be able to see anything happening. And vice versa, if we are the demigods, where it's not a big trip, we're moving fast, but like a film to speed up. Right. That's clear enough. There is this temporal relativity, but I wonder if there's also some spatial relativity with it too. You know something about this?
He's
going to speculate too.
Some example with the sun, right? You see, oh, the sun is rising, the sun is setting. But actually, like you see, like a picture of the sun, you know, going up, going down. But before the sunlight comes to planet Earth, what you see is actually
a little late, right?
A little late, yeah.
Well,
10 minutes, according to
eight and a half.
Is it 8 and a half? Excuse me. You've got to be refined on that one.
Even in modern cosmology, they have that idea of the expanding universe, and planets are supposedly moving away at several million miles
per hour.
Mm-hmm. But we don't see that, mm-hmm. because of the distances involved. It doesn't come to us there.
Well, they claim that the Andromeda galaxy, as we perceive it now, is that it looked like 2.5 million of years ago.
That's right. The further out you look, supposedly, the further back in the past you go. So that's why they think that by going further out, they're only searching for their origin. You're going to go back far enough, you'll see the beginning of the creation. These are far out people, huh? So anyway, so he teaches this to the people of this, and see here, Prabhupada in the purport, in India, Bhart Varsha. So everywhere here and then says, the inhabitants of Bhart Varsha are gradually becoming degraded malechas and yavanas. How then will they teach others? Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement has been started, not only for the inhabitants of Bhart Varsha, but for all the people of the world. So very clearly here, it's either the shrunken Bhart Varsha or, So this is the context. So now here's the mantra of that.
Can we just say that next sentence after the highlights? There's still time that if the inhabitants of Bhart Varsha take this movement of Krishna consciousness seriously, time will be served. I'm just thinking that it's very interesting. I've been discussing this recently about why Prabhupada put so much time into India when he came back in 1970. Mm-hmm. From that time on, he spent more and more time in India. Mm-hmm. Although when he first went to the West, he actually had no intention of ever coming back to India. That was his intention, was to stay in the West. Because he got some, following and interest. Mm-hmm. So he decided he was just going to stay there. Then in 1970 or 71, when there was that whole mind body business going on with the four sannyasis, Prabhupada left LA and flew to Japan and then came back to India. And from what I was told, I think by Smal Krishna Maharaj, Prabhupada actually went before the deities in Los Angeles and he was crying and saying, I don't know why you want me to go back there. I didn't want to go there, but now you want me to go back, so now I'm gone. So when he came to India, then he worked like crazy. I mean, so much personal effort into, getting things going here. And I think that now we see India coming up in the world, its prestige in the West, especially in the last 5 years, has become so much. India is becoming like one of the leading countries in the world.
Yeah, everybody in America is now watching Bollywood movies.
Yeah.
It used to be just Russians, but not Americans.
So it's almost as if Prabhupada saw that India's position is going to increase, and then if our prestige in India is good, then that will automatically then fall.
It seems to be happening, yeah, that's true. At the same time, as it becomes westernized and it's also becoming more degraded at the same time. But what ISKCON has taught people is how to stay devotees even in a non-rural village environment. So people are learning. I mean, you know, now you know, in America, we have all these Indians coming to America on these H-1 visas, you know, the IT specialist, and they're mostly young guys, and they're working in various countries and everything. But there a lot of them are devotees now, just from Bombay and Mumbai and other places, you know, and even their parents are devotees. Now they're all over America. So they were not made devotees in America, they're made devotees in India, and they're coming. And not coming as members, you know, as functioning members of our people, they're initiated, but they're not no temple devotees or anything like that. It's quite an interesting new group of people to suddenly show up on our doorstep. And very good preachers. The real difficulty in the West right now is to get people who are Indians to preach to non-Indian Westerners. They still talk to their own people. We have that breakthrough. But you know, if you're an Indian and you want to speak about spiritual things, you immediately have so much more credibility. But somehow or other, you know, you always preach to the people you're socially comfortable with, almost always, except on book distribution. And even then, you select, people are selective who they talk to, you know. That's the nature of the case. Here's this mantra. We're coming toward the end, but let's chant this mantra. This one's a little difficult because of the Shilayo. So we'll break it up. This Upashamam Shilaya, you see here in the word for word. And then Uparata TM is tough, Anat Myaya. That's the only hard part. We'll put the Namaha, so this Namo will become Namaha, and then Kinchana is Akinchana Vittaya. So there's an A there that drops out because of the Sandhi, okay? We'll give this a try here. Om Namo Bhagavate Upashama Shilaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Upashama Shilaya.
Uparatanatmyaya Namaha.
Uparatanatmyaya Namaha.
Akinchana Vittaya Rishabhaya Naranaraya.
Akinchana Vittaya Rishabhaya Naranaraya.
Paramahamsa Parama Gurave.
Paramahamsa Parama Gurave.
Atmaramadipataye Namo Namaha.
Atmaramadipataye Namo Namaha.
There it is. That's how they pray with this mantra. Who is you can the best of all saintly persons? Offer my obeisances unto Narayan. The name is down there in the bottom, but he puts it at the top. The best of all saintly persons, Rishi Rishabha. Boy, that's not a great name to give somebody, Rishi Rishabha. We probably say Rishi Rishabha, but it's right, Rishi Rishabha. Rishi Rishabha. He is the
Rishi is going to come.
Huh?
Rishi.
Rishi Rishabha, the most exalted of all saintly persons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the most self-controlled Upasamashila and self-realized. I guess that's the most, both of those. He is free from false prestige. He's the asset of persons who have no material possessions, akinchana vitta. He's the spiritual master of all paramahansas. Huh? Paramahamsa parama guru. Gurave is a allocative case of guru. Paramahamsa parama guru. Not locative, it's what is the dative, ablative case. Atma Ramaya Adipatta, the best of the self-realized persons, master of the self-realized, yeah, Adipatta. So that's, those are the prayers to him. And then, well, this is the first time we see this. I mean, this is interesting. Gayati Chedam. And he chants this. And so now the verses that Narada Rishi, he sings, Gayati is actually sings. And he sings this, little introduction there. Uh-huh.
Narayan, two personalities or one?
It's referred to here always as a singular. Everywhere I see it as he.
Because I'm just thinking that Krishna and Arjuna are said to be also.
Narayan. That's why I want to see what the deity is like. Is it two people, Narayan, mm-hmm. together, or is it just one person called Narayan? There's two.
Two, and they all show Narayan Vishnu is two, even in our Bhagavatam.
Yes, yeah, two, right? Yeah. But he says here, well, sometimes, you know, like, you can say Radha Madhava, and you could say he, because it's Madhava, as Prabhupada says, who's controlled by Radha. In other words, the name of the deity isn't Madhava, it's Radha Madhava. Mm-hmm. So it could be singular. Radha Sharvihari is Krishna. You can take the compound that way, or you could make it a dual, you know, Radha and Krishna, but it's, well, it makes it a name of Krishna. When he discusses the meaning of Jai Radha Madhava, he says this means Madhava who is controlled by Radha. That's his name. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you saw here earlier, he referred to Narayan is referred to as not as they, but as, well, it would be a dual in Sanskrit. The two of them, like Krishna Balaram, all day. It's weird in Sanskrit, right? They have singular, plural, and dual. A whole set of endings for just when two people are doing things together. That's really cute. A whole other thing to memorize, but anyway. The older languages are, the more complicated they are, just as what you wouldn't expect from the theory of evolution. Narada, the most powerful saintly sage, also worships Narayan by chanting the following mantra. And so now, here's the translation. Is the master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation with this visible cosmic manifestation, yet he is completely free from false prestige. This is the verse we have. Although to the foolish he appears to have accepted a material body like us, he is unaffected by bodily tribulations like hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Although he is the witness who sees everything, his senses are unpolluted by the objects he sees. That's a very nice... and Prabhupada explains to the purport, we see something, an object of desire, immediately we become polluted just by what we see. But when they see something, or when the Lord sees something, he's unpolluted. And it's here. Drastu, he is the seer of everything, but the drip, the power of vision, vidushyate darsana, is not polluted by material qualities. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that unattached, pure witness of the world, the Vivikta Shakshi, his personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says, the Lord is described as such that another. Now in this verse, he is more fully described. And then he's the creator and unattached to it. He sees everything and is present everywhere. But because his body is transcendental, he is above vision, the objects of vision, and the process of vision. Isn't that far? He sees, but he's above that tripartite division. The seer, the object of seeing, and the act of seeing. It's interesting. And then he goes into how he's transcendental. Although he is the seer of everything, he's not afflicted with faulty vision. See, it's very interesting that when one sees something through the eyes of desire or attachment, immediately it's misperception. It's faulty vision. Your vision is impure and therefore defective. So we don't see things the way they actually are. I mean, you may notice that the place where you can start to see things as they are is described in the mode of goodness. You see things in the right position here. But in the mode of passion, there's a distortion because you're narrowly fixated on the object of desire, and everything you see is kind of centered around that, and it kind of sets up a distortion in perception.
Vishayi.
Yeah, that's right. When you see like that, so you don't see correctly. It's therefore knowledge does not develop in the mode of passion. Except the kind of knowledge was called Shupagan, Shupagan, how to make things. Prabhupada describes scientists as shooters because they're always making machines. Shoemakers on a slightly more elevated scale.
Technology.
Shoemaker, yeah. Shupagan is what it's called. It's not really Gan, but you don't have that. So the basically is just how to get what you want and how to manipulate things. And then the mode of ignorance, there's so much oblivion and apathy. You're confused about everything. So at least the mode of goodness, the vision starts to clear, but really transcendental. I mean, this is something else again. Faulty vision. Therefore, although he is the witness and the seer, so his vision is everywhere, he's aloof from all affection for the activities he sees. He is only openness. I thought we'd get further today, but we didn't. So we'll have to stop here. Any other questions? Okay, then we have class tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, no class, because it's if you understand what you're doing. That's a big
one.
Huh? And how many after that? I'll show you the schedule. Let's see. I'll share my schedule with you, but okay. I'll do it anyway. We have class that goes up into the third. So after Nityananda, there's just three more classes, or we're not going to get very far. Maybe we'll rush through a couple of chapters, just an overview, if I can get it together to do that. So there's four more classes from now. And then, of course, I shift into an entirely another state of being. That's a special.
Baba.
And Baba. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Sarvagama and Ramananda are both self-solution.